A proud sponsor of Insight on Business, the News Hour, is AARP Iowa. With over 370,000 members, AARP is helping families with a host of programs, from Fraud Watch to helping build more livable communities. Learn more at aarp.org.
Welcome back to Insight on Business, the News Hour. With me is a returning visitor to Insight on Business. Her name is Di Findley. She happens to be the executive director of the Iowa Caregivers Association. And what that means to you is that she is in charge of an organization that, if I'm using this term correctly, sort of looks out and helps support direct caregivers in the state of Iowa. And there are thousands. Di, welcome back to the Business News Hour. Good to hear from you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, we are no strangers to each other. We've known each other for decades rather than years. And both of us have been deeply concerned with regard to issues that revolve around long-term health care, assisted living, the people that work in those places, hospitals, clinics, and the list goes on and on. Tell us a little bit, give us a quick backstory of what the Iowa Caregivers Association is and what you're attempting to do.
We exist primarily to do, just as you said, provide support for those on the front lines of direct care. So we are a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization statewide and an independent organization. And we think it's really important to maintain that independence so that we can be true to our mission, which is to enhance the quality of care by providing education, recognition, advocacy, and research in support of those who provide direct care.
Any idea how many direct caregivers there are in the state of Iowa?
You know, it depends on who you ask on any given day. Because we lack infrastructure, you know, at the state level, nobody really knows exactly how many people are working in this field at any given time. But the estimates are between 45 and 65,000.
And that's a slug of folks. And they're spread over all types of facilities. Is that right?
Yeah, they work in everywhere from in the homes of individuals that they're serving, nursing homes, assisted living, adult day services, hospices, nursing homes, and hospitals as well. And they serve Iowans of all ages and abilities.
Sure, and I think one of the things that we tend to forget, much of the focus is on nursing homes or assisted living facilities, congregate homes, but there are also rehab facilities that are out there as well. And for any number of reasons, from spinal cord injuries to brain injuries, et cetera, et cetera. So the universe is wide and varied. Is that accurate?
Yes, very.
Yeah. All right. Well, in April, and we are in the midst, as everybody knows, we are in the midst of a COVID-19 pandemic. It continues to ravage across the planet. We have over 1.5 million cases in the United States, nearing, I believe it's now over 91,000 deaths. There's great debate out there about testing facilities, and there's great debate about the impact of this and the economics of this. Just this week, we heard that another 2.4 million Americans are unemployed, taking that number to over 38 million unemployed Americans. And that's the low number because there's a number of folks that have not, have given up looking for a job. So we really don't know, but it is at levels that are larger than the Great Depression. How is all of this? I mean, and that's just the, that's the 35,000 foot view.
Mm-hmm.
When you're visiting with folks that you care for that are within the Iowa Caregivers Association, what are the three or four things that they're most concerned about? And I'm aware that you did a survey back in April. Let's talk about that for just a moment. Who did you survey, first of all?
Well, if I could just, before we even go there, just just generally speaking, as far as this pandemic is concerned, because it is one of our key concerns. I mean, I would not want to be the governor right now. And we do commend the governor and her team for, you know, some of the actions that they've taken in dealing with what has to be just an insurmountable, you know, demands. However, we are, you know, being told that we're in this together. And sometimes it's difficult to be in it together when the stories or the voices, you know, from all the stakeholders are not part of that broader conversation. And so we're very concerned about all the healthcare workers, older Iowans, people with disabilities and their families, because some of them feel like they are not being heard. And so that was one of the reasons why we thought we needed to do these surveys to get a glimpse into what people are really experiencing out there in the trenches. And so, and also just to clarify, you know, they are essential workers. Direct care workers are essential workers. They are on the front line of this pandemic, as you already said. And we at Iowa Caregivers, I mean, we've known that direct care workers are essential workers, you know,
for years.
Right. But nothing. And we say this kind of, you know, lightheartedly, but it's true. Nothing defines essential quite like a pandemic. And they're essential because they do provide about 80% of the direct hands-on care in all of those different settings. So you and I can sit here, you know, today and communicate remotely through Zoom or some other venue. But excuse me. But what I think people really need to understand, your listeners, is that this social distancing that we're all being asked to practice is not an option for direct care workers. They can't bathe, dress, you know, assist with oral hygiene or assist someone with toileting from 6 feet away. And that's why they're really at greater risk for contracting and spreading the virus, which gets us to the surveys that we did. We did one survey on personal protective equipment, and that's because we were getting emails, calls, and inquiries from people expressing concern. But we did one on personal protective equipment, their access to it, one on testing, most recent one was on testing, and then one on childcare for direct care workers, the lack of access to childcare. So, you know, it is critical that there's priority personal protective equipment and testing for this workforce. And we began advocating for this really early on. And I think it has gotten better, probably, Michael. And we talked about this a little bit earlier. The surveys that we did were, 3-4 weeks ago. And so we probably need to go back and recheck. We think things have gotten a little better. We hope things have gotten better. But we are still hearing from workers and employers stories about the lack of PPE and testing.
Well, I was, you made available to me those survey results. And as I went through them, and again, they were about PPE and other fears. That was the third of the three surveys. There's also child care challenges, testing, and support. So let's start with one of the things that is a hot button issue all across the United States, and that's relative to testing. Now, what I was interested in your survey results, there were a number of facilities and employees of facilities that said that they had not tested. And then if offered the test, would do you think you need it? And there was a surprising number of people, about, you know, maybe 60%, that said no, we think we're doing okay. Now, this was in mid-April. Mm-hmm. Can you explain that?
No. No, it's a question I don't have an answer for. I mean, again, we just try to advocate and share, you know, some of these stories that we're hearing, and hope that the elected officials and the governor and her team are hearing us, that there are still some really major concerns out there about people having access to testing. And I can tell a personal story. I live in a very small town where the only nursing home in town, small nursing home, it has an outbreak.
And what county are you in, Di?
I'm in Jasper County.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
And everybody in town knew that there was an outbreak before it was ever made public. And then I have a sister-in-law who was also working there at the time, who has asthma, and her doctor said she should not be, going back to work due to her health issues.
Sure.
And so I had some conversations with her about that, but she was definitely exposed. One of her coworkers, 76-year-old woman, I think she said, who was very ill, and then other coworkers who tested positive. So they did get tested finally. But she said, as far as the PPE and the testing, that didn't come until later. So in some cases, I think people feel like it's been a little late,
in getting out. Now, mm-hmm. Well, one of the other issues, and particular to Iowa, is the length of time between the test. Well, first of all, how to get a test. We've seen news stories from across the state where individuals have presented themselves to medical personnel, and they have failed to meet the criteria that was established. That criteria was you have to be over the age of 65, you have to have underlying health conditions, and you have to work in a meatpacking facility in order to get tested. Well, that would leave out a whole bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you present and you are symptomatic, well, you can get a test. But if you're asymptomatic, highly unlikely. And so what all of that and the spread of this, and this is not editorial comment, this is just what we know, is that individuals can be asymptomatic for quite some time and spread the virus. And so testing and then getting the test results back in a timely manner is something that Iowa has been struggling with for weeks. Is that mm-hmm. accurate?
Yeah, I think, they're doing probably the best they can with what they've got. But again, priority testing for healthcare workers is just really, really important because of the nature of their work.
And, absolutely.
Yeah,
you would think that would be job one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Somebody asked me, okay, Libby, you're so smart about this stuff. What would you do? I said, I would deploy the National Guard and get it done. Let's go. We have people that we can put to work. Anyway, all right, let's talk.
Well, and on that, Michael, too, they have they've referenced the strike teams and now the test teams. So I think there is a much stronger effort in going into the facilities now and testing all the residents. But I still think it's up to the, if I'm not mistaken, but I'm pretty sure it's still up to the employer.
Yes, it is.
Whether they want. And I think most of them have requested testing. But we want to make sure that the employees there are also being, all of them are being tested on site as well.
Right. Our guest is Di Findley. She is the executive director of the Iowa Caregivers Association. I'm sorry, I get pretty passionate about this issue because having worked in long-term health care for
yes.
a number of years and knowing what our long-term health care attendees, our employees do on a regular basis, every single day. And I know the love that these people have for the people that they take care of. That's why they're in the business. They're certainly not in the business to make money. Because, as both of us know, wages in this area, for the most part, tend to be relatively low. All right, so we've talked about testing and support. I want to go to another topic that you raised. And I looked at the results of this topic. And this was really, you think testing is controversial and worrisome for individuals. Child care challenges, that got blown out of the water with people really voicing significant concerns about what they were going to do with their kids, for crying out loud. Can you flesh that out a little bit for us?
Well, I'll try. And I guess even here, I would back up just a little bit, going back to some of the earlier comments you made about the wages and the earnings of this workforce, but you know as well as we do that this is a workforce that was already in crisis, really, before yes. the pandemic. Yes. You know, the pandemic just kind of exposes kind of the societal and systemic problems that have existed, you know, for so long. And decades. There hasn't been for decades, and there just hasn't been the political will, I think, to implement some of the public policies that address those systemic issues. And if this doesn't do it, I mean, I really don't know what will. These are workers who are putting their lives on the line. They're predominantly women. You know, this is a high demand occupation, high turnover, and we're pretty sure that this pandemic is going to make it even, it's going to compound those problems. It's going to make it even more difficult to recruit people into this line of work. They earn a median hourly wage of $13.80 an hour. 10% of them don't have health care coverage. A lot of their kids are on Hawkeye, the state children's health insurance program. They're poorly benefited, 28%. And this was from Wage and Benefits Survey that Iowa Workforce Development did for us in 2019. 28% are working more than one job. And many of them rely on the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program and the child care subsidies, which gets to your
sure.
Question about child care. And what they're being faced with now is, I mean, child care, you know, they are already receiving child care subsidies, many of them. And now with the school closures, there are additional costs to child care that they can't afford. And there hasn't been, to our knowledge, any attempt to increase the amount of those subsidies. And the last federal stimulus that came through, that CARES Act, it had some relief funding in there for child care providers, which was great. They needed it, but there was no relief for the people needing the child care to pay the additional costs of child care. And I think the other thing is that there are a lot of parallels between these two workforces.
Oh, there
two
are.
Very essential workforces.
Yes.
Women and low income. Facing a lot of very similar concerns. But the employers we surveyed, 83% of the employers said that their essential workers were facing child care challenges due to COVID-19. I wrote down a couple of these stats. 65% of the child care providers had closed due to COVID-19. 53% said their child care provider is a family member or friend who can no longer provide care because they're an at-risk population. And 51% said they can't afford the additional cost of hours of child care needed due to school closures. So it's a huge issue, and there does need to be some relief there. And I think, you know, hopefully some of the child care providers are coming back online. And I know that the state's website that we probably should share with people. It's, you mentioned it earlier, it's coronavirus.
Yes, we'll have a link to that on the radio blog, yes.
Okay. But anyway, there's that. They have some child care resources on that website. But others, people have expressed some concerns about that too, because these pop-up like child care provider sites, they may not have the training, and some of them don't take infants. So that's, you know, it may help some, but it's certainly not enough.
Well, and there's some other underlying issues relative to child care, and especially, okay, so, and again, this is another one of those topics that I forgive me, and this is not editorial comment, but this is something I'm extremely passionate about. That we have individuals making choices. I mean, they're having to work, as you indicated, two jobs, perhaps. Median income or pay is about $13.80 an hour. And they're having to make choices with regard to child care. And when you take a number of individuals, aunts, uncles, grandpa, grandma, sisters, brothers, siblings, out of the child care delivery system, because they, for one reason or another, just can't do this, or they're fearful that mom is working at a facility. She is putting her health at risk every single day because she's coming or likely to come into contact with other individuals with COVID-19 and then bringing that home. I mean, this is just a disaster. And we've seen, even pre-COVID-19, where individuals in the state of Iowa are having to choose between quality daycare and sub-quality daycare, and the result has been children dying. And you know, and for some reason, and I don't know what that reason is, legislators, administration officials don't seem to connect those things, pay, child care support, and essential workers. So I excuse me for getting a little bit excited about that, but that's the reality that we live in the state of Iowa and many states.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, some, I agree, Michael. I think some steps, some positive steps have been taken the last, maybe even the last legislative session that Child and Family Policy Center and United Way have advocated for as far as child care subsidies. But again, there's always, we can always do.
There's advocacy. You're absolutely right. There is advocacy. One of the advocacy numbers is that currently a family of four can, there, I think it's 34% of the poverty level, which is about $32,000 a year for a family of four. And then you can get a subsidy, but that subsidy isn't enough to keep quality health, child care providers intact. And so the United Way and others, including me, we've called for moving it to 50% of the federal poverty line, which is about $51,000 a year, which would do a number of things. It would help people with child care. It would help businesses that want to be child care providers open up their, you know, and do these things, you know. So,
and addressing the cliff effect.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. But let me be very clear about this. This is not a new policy proposal. When we say, okay, the United Way has been advocating for this. Do you know how damn long the United Way has been advocating for this? 15 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you. I mean, it's the same. In many ways, it's the same as we've been advocating, you know, for decades, too, on policies and systemic changes that would put us in a position where we would be better prepared.
Sure. And again, I apologize. I just, you know, this is such an issue, and it touches everyone, because everyone in the state of Iowa, the 3.1 million of us, we know somebody that's in a facility or a caregiving situation or has children. But it you know, and as you said correctly, if this does not raise these issues to the top and front of mind awareness for not only the legislators and the administrators, but also the general public.
Yeah.
We're in trouble. Yeah. You know, because, and there's a lot of other inequities relative to this. All right. I'm sorry. We're getting out of time here. When this is all over, God willing, we will just have to go for a bottle of Cavassier and say, ah, screw it, you know, just to have fun.
Sounds like a plan.
One final thing that I wanted to touch on, and it was the final item, PPE and other fears. What was that survey about?
Well, we really kind of already addressed that, I think, Michael. Just again, just not having access to the proper or adequate personal protective equipment, and they were concerned about reusing personal protective equipment, and again, not, I don't know if I mentioned this earlier, but I mean, obviously concerned about their own personal health and well-being, but also very concerned about infecting a resident or somebody with a disability, you know, that they're providing support for in their home, or their own family and children. You know, some of them, you know, you could probably see from their comments had spouses or children who had asthma or some other compromised condition and very concerned about taking something home to their own families.
Right. Well, it is you know, and this is not over. Okay, we're at the end of May, and you know, we've reopened many businesses, and I understand the economics behind that. I also understand that the state has lost significant income relative to sales taxes. I get it. I truly understand the business side of all this, and time will tell. Whether or not we have turned a corner or if we have mitigated the loss, but it is and we're just talking about Iowa. You know, we're just talking about Iowa, and we have states that have that are going from 25% opening to 50% opening and so on, and some that have just thrown open the doors, and we're sitting here going, okay, let's see where this goes. So it is a troubling, frightening reality that we live with, and we are unsure about how long this is going to go on.
Right.
Di Findley, always a pleasure to visit with you. You and I were, I believe, cut from the same cloth a long time ago, and I treasure your leadership. I treasure the Iowa Caregivers Association, and most of all, I really treasure the people that are doing the work. It's important. Di, thanks so very much for being with us. I appreciate this.
Thanks, and thanks to all the direct care workers out there. You take care, Michael.
I will. A difficult conversation on so many levels. Once again, that was Di Findley. She is the executive director of the Iowa Caregivers Association. And yes, we will have a link to their website up on our radio blog, as well as the official response page on COVID-19 from the state of Iowa. For all of us associated with the business news headlines, Chap Ramsey is our production coordinator, sales and marketing. Aaron Libby, the voice of the Business News Hour, is Hunter Pease. And the music you're listening to right now was arranged, composed, and conducted by our friend James Goodlett of Jam Good Productions. For all those folks and for Di Findley, my name's Michael Libby. Have yourself a wonderful day. Be safe, be well, be careful, most of all. Be good to your fellow man. Good day.